Hello.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I've got a scratchy throat at this moment, which I didn't have when we recorded the episode. And I'm quite conscious that I might sound really different. How are you?
Well, if anyone didn't know this was a Jewish podcast, then the fact that how are you doing was met with the actual answer, how is she doing? Now you know. How lovely. I was going for fine, thanks. How are you? Yeah, good, thanks. Moving on. But no, we've got your scratchy throat.
That's very naive of you.
Well, it's blind optimism, I guess. I can't ever let go of the hope. Anyway, sorry to hear you're feeling croaky, especially when we're so close to heading up to Edinburgh for the festival.
I've got previews over this weekend, like on Sunday and on Monday. So I'm going to spend the next few days doing a lot of steaming with hot water. I recommend that to anyone having scratchy throat issues. Now that I've used all my medical credentials, how are you, Philip?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you? See how it goes? It's quite easy, yeah, isn't it? I'm fine. I'm exhausted. The school holidays have started because I'm going to Edinburgh next week, which means I'll be away for 3 weeks. My, I want to say penance, but it's not penance. It's a joy, is to spend these few days with my children doing wonderful activities. So yesterday I took them to Hampton Court, which was
lovely.
Okay, yes. It was where it was. Today, I took them to see a film in the cinema, which was pretty awful. It was called Elemental. It's a Disney Pixar film.
It sounds annoying already.
Yeah, it really wasn't good. There were literally 9 people in the cinema and 3 of them left halfway through. My son, the youngest, at one point decided to go down and sit in the front row. He was so bored. He kept telling me how much he hated it. He was so bored. He wanted to sit in the front row. He said so it was more blurry, so he couldn't see it. And then at one point, he started shouting at me from the daddy, daddy. I was like, what are you doing? There's people here. And I realized there weren't people here because the only other 3 people that were left had gone to the toilet.
So. He's going to be excellent value when he's an old Jewish man in a home.
He is the one who I've talked about on stage, where we gave him a baseball cap for his birthday and he hated it. We thought he'd love it. Spider-Man baseball cap. He absolutely hated it and had a proper meltdown tantrum. This is the worst present ever. Never get me this present again. And then later that day, I saw him wearing the hat. So I said to him, oh, I see you're wearing the cap. Does that mean you now like it? And he said, no, I'm wearing it so I don't have to look at it.
And I mean, that's amazing.
It was so clever. But also annoying. Yeah, it's nice. Just spending a nice couple of days with them, but it is absolutely exhausting. I read a chapter of a book this afternoon to my oldest and was falling asleep whilst reading. And I'm pretty sure I was making things up in the story based on what I was dreaming of.
That's so he didn't go to sleep, you did.
Yeah, he wasn't meant to go to sleep. He just wanted to hear a chapter of the story. I was like, sure, I love reading. I'll do it. But yeah, so I'm exhausted is the answer to your question, since you want an answer.
I like a proper answer.
I guess that's enough about my traumas of school holidays. What's the most Jewish thing that's happened to you?
Well, Philip, I had an amazing thing happen last week because I invited my brother-in-law, sister-in-law and their 2 daughters over on Shabbat. And I said, like, pop in, come in. We haven't seen you for ages. And my sister-in-law messaged me and she said, I just have to tell you that I said to the girls we were going to pop in. And they both went, can't we go for lunch? Auntie Rach makes the best Shabbat food. Can't we go to lunch? She might make chicken soup. She might make schnitzel. Please, can we go for lunch? And never has there been such an amazing compliment to me. So I phoned back and I said, of course, you must come for lunch. And then I made fresh chicken soup that I put in my crock pot so that it would like slow cook and we could have it for Shabbat lunch. And I made fresh schnitzels with like my own hands. And I took pictures of myself doing it to send to the girls. They're only young, to show them, you know, I love them so much. I'm going to make their favorite things for Shabbat. And we had the most brilliant time. They arrived, we were playing, we were giggling, we were having fun. And they decided they did not feel in the mood for chicken soup and they didn't eat any of it, which was devastating. But then when it came to the schnitzel, they were so excited about that the younger one, like there was one left at the end and then someone ate half of it. And she insisted on taking the other half home so that she could eat it later, although she couldn't remember what it was called. So she said to me, Auntie Rach, please pass me my meat thing with the crumbs on it, which is really cute. So I told them,
sweet.
You're going to be my most Jewish things of the week, that you wanted my Shabbat food and then you didn't eat it, but then you did eat it. It was really, really cute.
That is lovely. And I think it shows how tired I am that when you said you were making schnitzel with your own hands, I was thinking, I use turkey breast. That's weird.
I use chicken and these ones, chicken schnitzels, if I'm, just to be precise. And they were actually very good.
I make schnitzel with my own fair hand. It's one of the only dishes my kids genuinely love that I make. They rave about it whilst they're eating it. But we started doing it in the air fryer lately, rather than deep frying it, doing it in the air fryer. And it tastes all right. It just comes out a bit anemic.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite work. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. So if anyone wants to get in touch and let me know how to use my air fryer, please do.
We still talk about a meal that my parents took us out for in Jerusalem years ago, when my now nearly 18-year-old, 6'1" baby was about 6 or 7. And we went to this restaurant. I think it's called Tzidkiyahu. Lovely, very fresh food. And my kid, who was like, as I say, young, he had a schnitzel there bigger than his own head, and he ate it in a flash. I mean, I'm sorry for the vegans and vegetarians listening, but just trust me, if you were going to sort of go rogue for one thing, a fresh schnitzel is my recommendation.
I tell you what, though, in support of the vegans and the vegetarians, which is not something I often do, there are excellent alternatives out there. For me, it's just about having the kind of the meaty texture with breadcrumbs. Schnitzel is my favourite food, I think, outside. If I was ever sentenced to have a last meal, it would be schnitzel.
Schnitzel and rice, I think I'd go for. Chicken
schnitzel
soup.
And rice, schnitzel red cabbage, rice. Carrots.
Ooh, that's funny that we would want the same last meal. But also, why are we being killed? Like, what have we done? Was it crimes against podcasting?
I didn't say that we were being killed. I said we were being given a last meal. You said we were being killed. There are lots of reasons you could be having a last meal. And I have to say, if I were to have a last meal with anyone, Rachel, I would want it to be with you, because it would last forever. Because you talk to the waiter, you talk to the person next to you at the next table. Oh my goodness. And then the food executioner would be cold, we'd have to send it back. The executioner would be there. You'd be best mates by then. You'd probably find you were related to them. And by the end of it, they'd be a guest on the podcast.
Well, that does sound like fun. What is the most Jewish thing that's happened to you recently?
Well, I had a lot of fun recently at my cousin's wedding. It was one of the most beautiful weddings I've ever been to. But there were some funny moments I felt the need to highlight. It was my cousin, who is a fan of the show, Nikki. She's been mentioned on the show before. She's good friends with Kim, who was a previous guest. And it was her youngest son, Louis, who was marrying the wonderful Natty. They're a beautiful couple, really lovely people. And we're invited to the wedding. It was a highlight of the calendar because they'd said very clearly, no children. So it was amazing. Delightful. So we went to this wedding. It was a humanist wedding, and it was just so gorgeous. They'd had a registry wedding the day before, but they had this in Natty's parents' garden. It was just absolutely stunning. Celebrant was so funny, really, really kind of got them and understood them, talking about them. And there's just a few things that struck me as a Jewish person going to what is effectively a non-Jewish wedding. First thing is, non-Jews are very tall. There were so many, I mean, giants. Seriously, there was someone I was sat with at the table. They did this amazing seating plan where you sort of weren't with people you knew. So I was with my wife, but then the people next to us, they weren't even a couple actually, but we didn't know them at all. It encouraged conversation. So it was really, really lovely. But he was about 6'8".
I can't imagine you enjoying that.
No, do you know what? I feel I've gone off brand by admitting to enjoying that. They were such good conversationalists.
Okay.
It wasn't dull. It wasn't awkward. They chatted to us. We chatted to them. It was really lovely. And the food was amazing. Oh, my goodness. But anyway, the first thing is non-Jews, giants.
Right.
Very tall. Second thing is, in the bar, they had Coke Zero as an option.
Oh.
They did not have Diet Coke. And I thought, if ever there was an anti-Semitic wedding, this is it. No, I obviously not. But yeah, I was like, who doesn't have Diet Coke? There are definitely Jews coming to this wedding. And the last thing that struck me, so we had the wedding on the Saturday. It was absolutely beautiful. And then a few of us stayed over in the area. And they said, come back to the house for lunch on Sunday before you all go off your separate ways. And they were doing a meal. And I think there's maybe about 75 people there. And I had been led to believe it was going to be a hog roast.
Hog roast. Now, with an apple and everything.
Right, exactly. Now, as it turns out, there was originally talk of it being a hog roast. And then the family were like, no chance. Like, you know, we're on board with humanists. We're on board with the tall people. We're on board with the Diet Coke missing from the bar. you not having a hog roast. So instead, they did an amazing spread. It was just a buffet of things from coronation chicken to tomato mozzarella salad, things like that. And someone said to me, well, surely this is better than the hog roast. I thought, actually, it is. It's much better than the hog roast. Although I don't think I've ever had coronation chicken in anything other than a sandwich. And they were right. Like, you know that you can just take anything that's in a sandwich out of a sandwich and it's still... I was like, yeah, I suppose. Oh, yeah. So that was my most Jewish thing. It was really nice to be part of that experience. And Louis and Nathy, wherever you are in the world at the moment, we wish you well and congratulations to you. Well, again, mazel tov, I don't know. I mean, what do you say? But congratulations and thank you for inviting me. Thank you for humouring me as I mercilessly mock your generosity. It was genuinely possibly the best wedding I've ever been to, bar my own.
That's quite high praise, I would say.
Yeah, I loved it.
I mazel tov everyone, by the way, for all positive news.
I know.
Let's have a chat about this episode because it was a long time coming in that Mara Wilson was really up for doing it very early on in our beginnings of the existence of Jew Talking to Me.
Yes.
And then through really clashing timetables, different things she was working on, different things we were working on, things going on with the pandemic initially, whatever, it kept being postponed to the point where it became something we never imagined would ever genuinely occur. And it was so lovely and so Jewy.
It was lovely. It was a really nice episode. Probably my favourite episode bar the wedding and my wedding. She was just really generous with the time. And there wasn't anything we couldn't ask and we couldn't talk about. And she just really opened up. There's one problem with it. And that I missed a pun and I'm kicking myself now.
So you
played the clip in the promo, so it's not going to be giving away spoilers or anything, but she talks about the fact that she gave her cats Jewish names. And I asked whether that was ceremonially for things like bar mitzvahs and whatever. And I can't believe I didn't say a cat mitzvah. I'm kicking myself. So I'm saying that to you now. So the audience, you know, sometimes you go back over these things and it doesn't always happen. The magic doesn't always happen straight away. It's like when you have an argument with somebody and then you're driving home and you think, oh, I should have said that. This was exactly the same thing. So just when you get to that point, just imagine that I said something brilliant about cat mitzvahs.
Use your imaginations. I'm sure you'll manage.
Really, we're very grateful not only to have coming on the show, but for sticking with us, because as you said, there were delays, but really absolutely worth the wait. This is a glorious episode. Hopefully you will enjoy it as much as we did. Let's have some feedback. Tell us what you think. We are going to be taking a break for the next few weeks from releasing podcast episodes just whilst we're at the Edinburgh Fringe. We will remind you about that halfway through the show. We'll drop in a cheeky advert so you know where we're performing. We will try and put out some other bits of content, so look out for those on our social media and on the various platforms that we use. But for now, sit back, tune in, and listen to the wonderful Mara Wilson.
I'm Rachel Krieger.
And I'm Philip Simon. We are two Jewish comedians.
I'm Orthodox and I'm a bubby girl because now I'm a grandma.
And I'm Reform and I'm a barmy boy because the only time I voluntarily go to shul is to celebrate bar mitzvahs. This show is the audio equivalent of Barbie, invented by Jews, culturally iconic and not averse to hearing the word Ken.
In each episode, we chat to our favourite Jews about their lives and experiences growing up and how much Jewishness plays a part. Are they, come on Barbie, let's go party? Or are they, I've got nothing to wear, who's doing their catering?
Welcome to Jew Talking to Me. Let's introduce our guest. She's an actor best known for her roles in films like Mrs. Doubtfire, Matilda, and Miracle on 34th Street, and author of Where Am I Now and Good Girls Don't. It's Mara Wilson.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. Thanks for joining us. If you were listening to the bit before, you'll know that Rachel's Orthodox and I'm Reform. But Mara, what type of a Jew are you?
You know, it's funny because I grew up conservadox, I would say. We were observant. And I think that I thought that we were Reform Jews because we went to, you know, an Orthodox shul. And I mean, I call it a shul, which is something that, you know, pretty much only, I would say, very observant Jews in America call it. You know, it's a Yiddish term. It literally means school, actually. But, you know, mm-hmm. other people say Reform Jews, I knew, would probably be like, oh, yeah, we go to temple, we go to synagogue. But we kind of cheated a lot of things. And I think that I thought that we were Reformed because so many people around us were so much more religious than we were. And also, unfortunately, some of the people we knew had kind of a holier-than-thou complex. So we would do things where we would go to a shul, but it was two towns over. And so we would drive halfway there and then walk the rest of the way. And, you know, my mom would say that we had to keep kosher at home, but we just kind of kept nominally kosher. Like, we didn't eat, you know, things that, like, obviously we never ate pork or shellfish. Although I do think we might have when I was very young, but I think, you know, there was peer pressure to not, and shrimp and bacon weren't a big thing in my family anyway. So it was easy to give up. So we never mixed milk and meat, but we also didn't daven or anything. Right. So it was kind of I guess I could say we were conservative Jews, and, you know, we were bad Orthodox Jews. We were not very good at it. And I didn't even know that, like, modern Orthodox was a thing. And there's so many different varieties and ways of being Orthodox. And there's so many ways of being Jewish. So it's funny because I would say that I'm probably closest to Reform. But I also think that a lot of the things I do feel more like they're based in conservative and Orthodox traditions. Mm. You know, even though my sister is probably more observant than I am, she says there's a lot about Reform Judaism that she doesn't quite understand, even though her partner is, you know, grew up Reform Jewish. And so there's a lot she's like, yeah, it just feels very different to me. But at the same time, she's not Orthodox. I'm not Orthodox. So it's strange. It's kind of this mix. And honestly, the places that I felt like the best going to for, you know, Shabbat and holidays are places where they're like, you know, you can come regardless of what you are. You know, communities where it's like, where there's some people are modern Orthodox and some people are Reform and some people are conservative and some people are, you know, completely secular Jews and some are like Jewish Buddhists. I mean, this is California that I live in. And it's kind of a mix of things. And that's where I think I feel the most comfortable, because, like, I went to some place once with a Reform friend of mine and they were saying all the prayers in Hebrew, but they also had kind of like a drum circle and guitars going. And he was like, this is so strange to me, because I grew up with, you know, Reform and everything was in English and there was a lot of talking in English and, you know, we used lights on Saturdays. And I was like, oh, I said to him, this makes sense to me because I grew up conservadox and also I went to art school. So breaking out the guitars and the drum circle and having this kind of spiritual get together. I went to, you know, an arts high school in California. That feels totally normal to me.
I love that you've got a word for that. Conservadox.
I think somebody used it a couple of years ago and I was like, oh my gosh, that's exactly it. Oh my gosh, that's it. That's what we were.
It's like when people say Ashkenormative. I think that's such a great term.
Ashkenormative is a great term too. And it's true. I thought it was basically just us until I was much older. And then I knew about Mizrahi Jews, but I didn't know the rich history of Sephardics or Beta Israel or all of these people. Like, one of my favorite accounts, like, on social media, I can't even remember what it's called, but it's just Jewish people around the world. Mm. So it's Jews in India, it's Jews in the Philippines, it's Jews in China, it's, you know, Jews all over the place. And I absolutely love it. You know, Turkish Jews, and that I really love.
It's actually not a real account. It's controlled by Russian bots or AOI. But to me, that really sums up Judaism. The fact that you can come up with a name of what you want your kind of stream of Jewishness to be. And ultimately, it's just Jewish. We're Jewish.
For us, it's something different because in some ways it can be a very much a faith-based religion and culture. But for me, I have trouble believing in a lot of things, I think. But I've always felt like that is understood in Judaism, that it's understood and you're supposed to grapple with these things and you're supposed to struggle with them, as opposed to taking everything on faith. And that's not to speak ill of any other religions and belief systems that do take everything on faith, because I think that very much works for a lot of other people. But I like the idea of talking through it and arguing about it and debating it and struggling with it and wrestling with it. And, like, I've told people, I'm like, there are rabbis that, you know, don't know if they believe in Hashem. And that's considered completely fine. It's so much it's about learning and community. And so, like, I told somebody recently who grew up, I think, like, Southern Baptist, you know, so very religious Christian. We talked about what our religion meant to us at this point in our lives. And she's not as observant in the same ways anymore. But I said, look, when I light the Shabbat candles, what I'm doing is I'm connecting with generations upon generations upon generations of people. I'm doing something that goes back thousands and thousands of years. And so I feel transcendent because I'm connecting to a people and a people in a different time period. And that I think is really, really cool.
Yeah, I think that has its own value. And that's the thing of being a religion and a culture, I think. I mean, you know, we're modern Orthodox, I guess, as an identifier. But I grew up in a community where it was an Orthodox synagogue, but the community wasn't like so bothered about who did what and who didn't do what. There wasn't gossip about people who, let's say, pushed a stroller on Shabbat morning when we didn't have an Erev. There wasn't like a boundary anywhere. You know, there wasn't judgment of that. And then ultimately, my husband and I have ended up in a very similar community to that. There are people way more religious than us. There's people who are completely secular, but just enjoy the communal aspect, or they want a sort of traditional style prayer, but they want to be somewhere that no one's going to say, you're gay, you can't come in, you're this, you can't come in. Exactly. Do you know what I mean? There's not really that vibe. But interestingly, at Limud Festival in December, I don't know if you've ever been to any of the Limud events where you are, because I know they're a lot in America.
Which events?
Limud. It's a big
I've heard of Limud, but I've never gone. Yeah.
It's fantastic. Go. You'll love it. But one of the things that it's open to the entire community, people who identify as Jewish in whatever way they consider, and also people who are interested in that stuff. So it's a really interesting thing. If you go over Shabbat there, they have every kind of service, and during the week, actually, every possible denomination of Jewish service. If there's someone who wants it and is happy to kind of help set it up, it will happen. And this year, or rather last December, we went for the first time to an Orthodox egalitarian service. Mm, so it was like, they're known as a partnership service. And I've always, or since I heard about them, been curious to go, because they're run along the lines of, you know, rabbinical teaching, but to as left as it can go, I guess, while still within keeping. So there's enough kind of religious justification to prove that's an okay way to do things. It was fascinating to me, because what was unusual was that it felt completely normal and lovely. Do you know what I mean? It didn't feel like we're doing something naughty or extra. Yeah. It was just a lovely service where part of it was led by a woman and part of it was led by a man, and everyone was there because they wanted to be. So we all joined in with all the stuff. It was just,
oh my
gorgeous.
Gosh. I just remembered my absolute favorite joke, which is, how do you know which denomination a wedding you're at?
Go for it.
Let's see. At an Orthodox wedding, the bride's mother is pregnant. Okay. At a conservative wedding, the bride is pregnant. At a Reform wedding, the rabbi is pregnant. At a Reconstructionist wedding, both of the brides are pregnant. Yeah, that's my thing. But I think that things are kind of blurring in a way. And I don't know if it's going to continue in that way. But I do think that, yeah, that is something that really appeals to me. I think that another thing is that I definitely was in a community. And part of this was probably just, you know, members of my extended family being competitive and holier than thou. But I did feel like I was in a community where I would be judged when I was very young. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I got a little bit older and I was like, oh, it's so nice to actually meet Orthodox people who are nice and welcoming and not going to judge me. And it makes me incredibly sad, because I feel like I had kind of a negative association with sort of any religion for a very long time, because, you know, I'd met some unpleasant people who were very religious. So I kind of fell away from it, I would say, probably when I was like university age, which I think is a common thing for a lot of people. I think a lot of people fall away from their beliefs, because when you're in, you know, secondary school, when you're in college, university, you're trying to figure out what it is exactly that you believe. But even when I was like at my most, no, I'm an atheist and nobody can tell me otherwise, I still definitely connected with Judaism very much. And I think it might have been because I had a Jewish partner at the time, but I also think that it was something that still meant a lot to me. And, you know, the older I get, the less hard and fast I've been about these things, but the more I've been willing to go even deeper into like, oh yes, this means something to me, and I love the community of it, and I love the tradition of it, and I love the connection of it, and I love the history of it. So that's something that I, you know, sort of dove back into and am probably going to keep doing. And yeah, I guess we'll see. I mean, it's funny because like I have a lot of Jewish friends from the UK, but I still don't quite know how it differs from us in the US. And I mean, even Canada is way different than the US. Most Jewish people I knew in Canada were, I didn't know very many Reform Jews in Canada. I knew a lot of conservative and a lot of Orthodox ones there. But like I was in Edinburgh for, what Jewish holiday was it? I think maybe Sukkot, I want to say. Okay. And I love Sukkot. And I really wanted to see if there was anything anything there. And I thought, okay, well, I know a good number of Jews in London, and this is a big UK city. There might be a synagogue. So I looked and there were none. No, that's not true. There weren't none. There was one synagogue, but I think it was like very Orthodox in a way that I was like, oh, I don't think I have the right clothes for this. And then I looked and of course there was also Chabad, because Chabad gets everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I don't know if you guys have Chabad over there, but Chabad is, oh yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean? We've got Chabad in the corner of the room. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's where like all through college and university, like, you know, all through like my days at NYU, anytime, like I never needed to buy a menorah. Just giving them out in the park.
It's the same here. We haven't bought a Hanukkah or candles.
Yes.
We've got the family Hanukkahs, but we haven't bought candles for years because every year they're just giving them out on the street.
Do they drive around in a big
mitzvah tank?
Yes, the mitzvah tank. Yes.
Yeah.
Blaring the music. Yeah.
100%. And actually my baby, like my younger son, is leaving for university, hopefully in September. I'm fine. Don't worry about it. I'm okay.
Yeah.
Chippering wreck. But I've been trying to say to him, like, he's not so keen on like the intricate practice, shall we say, of religion. Yeah. But I, you know, I've been saying to him, join all the Jewish stuff, because my other nephew, who's like a year older, has said he only has to cook food for himself once every other week, because between Chabad, Aish, the chaplaincy, the local community, whatever, like everyone's so desperate to feed the students and like keep them in the flock in whatever way. You know, I said, no one's waking you up at 6 o'clock in the morning to put tefillin on. They're just giving you chicken.
My sister went to UCLA a few years ago, and at least pre-pandemic, they would deliver matzo ball soup to you if you were ill.
I've done that to Philip.
Yes.
It's true. Yeah.
I've done that for my friends too. Actually, I had surgery last year, and friends of mine were asking what I could do. And I said, please just send me matzo ball soup. And so I had friends in LA and friends in New York give me matzo ball soup.
It's the best.
So I just lived on that. Once I was well enough to eat regular food, it was just amazing matzo ball soup. Well, I think actually they might've asked my sister, what can we do for Mara while she's recovering? And she said, oh, just send her matzo ball soup. She'll be fine.
That's a very good plan. In Edinburgh, you're right, there's the Orthodox. There is a Reform synagogue there as well. I've been going for many years for the Fringe, as has Philip. And
yes.
I've become like an adopted member of that community, because I don't work on Shabbat. So like I gig 6 days of the week, and then I have 25 hours with my other community, like 6 days with my comedy community, and then one day with my Jews. Yeah, the Orthodox.
Because maybe I should check them out when I hope to go back to Edinburgh again.
You can always hit me up. I'll give you all the advice you want. But yeah it's a nominally very Orthodox synagogue. But it's like the place where I grew up. I think in the UK, areas like London and Manchester, where they've got really big Jewish communities, everyone is a bit more kind of protective of the style of their community. Yeah. So for example, if I went to Shul in Golders Green, I would probably dress a bit differently than if I was going to my local one, where like I still dress nicely, but no one's that bothered. And if somebody came in like a vest top and trousers, no one will care. Like, it's not a thing. It's you're here to be part of whatever's going on. And outlying communities like that, where I grew up, it wasn't, you know, that kind of ultra-Orthodox wider community, are very chill about that stuff in the UK. So Edinburgh, it's a religious synagogue, but, you know, especially during the summer, during the Fringe, people come in all different kinds. No one asks you any questions. They just feed you. I mean, literally. Yeah.
That's good to know.
Me, like, scrimping and saving during the summer at the Fringe. It's so helpful.
I mean, I loved Edinburgh and I would love to go back there. And I sent pictures to my family and, you know, my siblings were like, we want to go so much. So it's good to know that if we go there. I mean, I have Jewish friends who live in places where there are no Jewish communities, but I feel like I need to live somewhere around other Jews. When I think about, oh, would I ever move? Because I'm from Los Angeles. I spent several years in New York City, probably the two biggest places for Jews in the United States. And my family comes from the Jewish side of my family because I'm also half Irish Gentile. I mean, a Jewish joke that I kind of made up was if you are Jewish in the United States and you want to marry outside the faith and you want somebody who will actually listen to you once in a while, you marry an Irish Catholic. If you want somebody who's going to talk just as much as you, you marry an Italian Catholic, because that's kind of the things that I've seen. You know, it's very loud. Like, you know, do you want somebody who's very loud and expressive? But, you know, but I also don't want to go into stereotypes, because also not everybody's Ashkenazi and not everybody's, you know, like that. And not everybody's, you know, but I have noticed there is a pattern there. that most people I know who are half Jewish, even though that's kind of not really a thing, but people who are have one Jewish parent and one not, they usually, I'll say like, oh, what's the other side of your family? And it's almost always Catholic. And it's usually Irish Catholic or sometimes Italian, Puerto Rican, Spanish. I don't know why. I guess probably because we all clustered in the big cities together. So that's probably why.
I feel guilty about everything all the time.
I think that, I think it is. I think it is the guilt. Because, yeah, because everybody I know who's got like one Jewish parent and one other, it's I think that's what it is. They connect over the guilt and family and food. Yeah.
Maybe the fact that we have clustered together is why we all kind of have the infighting as to how Jewish you are, who's the most Jewish. I'm not Jewish enough for you. You're not, because everyone else is out there. So suddenly we're judging ourselves.
That's why I've never understood, you know, the anti-Semitic conspiracies, because I'm like, we're not all in on everything together. Guys, we fight all the time.
Yeah. Two Jews, three opinions.
Exactly. We fight all the time. There is no consensus among us. You know, consensus isn't really how we do things. We do things by arguing, by talking, by debating. I mean, I think about like you go back to, I have Lithuanian Jewish ancestry, and there was the Litvaks, and I believe it was Hasids and Litvaks, and they were fighting about Hasidic people being too emotive with their prayer.
Yeah.
That was a major fight. And there's also fights about, like, serious fights about whether or not you put sugar in your gefilte fish.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a major thing, which, I mean, I don't quite understand it, but gefilte fish is not my favorite anyway, so.
It's not many people's favorite.
But have you tried it with sugar?
That's true. Maybe I just need to try it with sugar.
Yeah.
You need to come over and have mine.
I might have to try it. Do you make it with sugar?
Yeah. Well, sugar and salt. You know, like, the best popcorn is salty and sweet. And exactly. I believe that about gefilte fish as well.
Yeah.
She also takes her gefilte fish to the cinema. It's a nightmare. She sees an argument break out on social media and she's sat there with her gefilte fish.
I was on a flight once. It wasn't like a going to or from Israel or anything. It was, I think, going to France, and there was a religious family, a religious Jewish family, because you could be religious of other things, sitting on the plane. And the mum like opened up, like, packed lunches for everybody. And there was gefilte fish for some of them. And there was not cold meats, I can't remember, like some kind of sausage, something very dewy. I don't know. All I can tell you is it was a lot of very smelly food. I thought that's excessive, and I love all that stuff.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
That is a bit more fun on an airplane.
Enclosed spaces. I wouldn't eat gefilte fish in enclosed space. Imagine if you brought it up to the space station, you wouldn't be popular.
Oh, no, you wouldn't be. Have there been any Ashkenazi astronauts?
Well, they've been Israeli. They make you do all the spacewalks.
Yeah.
Like, no, you go outside.
Get out there. Eat that out there. Well, I mean, they eat paste anyway. So, you know, and gefilte fish, the consistency, yeah, you could eat it like a paste, basically. Yeah.
But also, if you had like a gefilte fish ball outside the spacecraft, it could end up, you know, when people think there's an asteroid heading towards the Earth, it's just gained a lot of momentum. It's lost its carrot somewhere out in the galaxy.
Yeah, rain matzo balls down on everybody.
I think this is your next film. Seriously.
It could be. Although, I mean, I have Mizrahi friends who they'll always just be like, and Sephardic friends are just like, our food is so much better than yours.
Yeah, they always
I'm like,
say
your
that.
Food is pretty good. Your food is very good. But, you know, Ashkenazi food is what I grew up with. So I have a soft spot for it.
They cook their fish with peppers and I'm allergic to them. So that's what like I said about that Sephardi community.
I do love the couscous and I do go by their rules on Pesach. I do definitely. I still eat rice. I still eat rice. Yeah. So thank you, Sephardic community, for being like, look, there's precedent for this. Yes.
I think if I was going to say one thing I pray for, you know, when people say like, I pray for world peace, I pray for whatever. My thing I pray for is that the Ashkenazi rabbis of our time will find a way to take away that concept of kitniot, that you can't eat rice and you can't eat beans. And you like, because the premise for it is all so out of date and irrelevant.
Yes.
And it would change my life so much because my family is really fussy. And also because, I mean, I love potatoes, but like 8 days of potatoes at two meals a day.
Yeah, no.
We have quinoa, which is considered like the gray area. So that's like our rebellion.
What is the reason for it, for those of our listeners that don't know, and me?
Oh, it's to do with in different countries, what was the staple food without which people wouldn't survive? So whereas you're not supposed to have all these various different things that aren't specifically mentioned, but they're things that could look like grains or could be used as grains. I mean, we're still... even if we're saying, oh, we don't have anything with grains or that leaven, we still make cakes that have all kinds of artificial things to make them rise. Like, we find ways of getting around everything. That's really the thing. So in countries, like, for example, where rice was the absolute staple, and it wasn't just about you were cutting out bread. If you also cut out pulses and rice, you would have like no food and it was a risk to your health. And my daughter-in-law is from an Indian Jewish family, and she gave up being able to have rice on Passover to marry my son.
Oh my goodness.
I think that's the most romantic thing I've ever heard, because I would have done it.
Yeah, that is a lot.
He did look into whether you can Sephardi yourself. Like, can he convert to Sephardi Judaism?
Yes.
And there is some kind of a way, but it was very complicated. So in the end, yeah, they didn't do it.
I think Ethiopian food is one of my favorite kinds of food ever. So I personally think that Israel has us all beat, but that's because I just love Ethiopian food so much. I think it's amazing. So that's some of my favorite Jewish food. Right. Yes. But I grew up with matzo ball soup. I will say though that I came from a family of not particularly good cooks.
And, oh, wow. That's like, traumatic.
My grandmother's latkes were always kind of greenish because she wouldn't drain the potatoes. So they were soggy and greenish. And so I always thought that my mother made them so much better, and I didn't realize that was because my mother just made them from a box.
I mean, that's the sort of story that needs a trigger warning on this podcast.
I know. I'm sorry. I've horrified so many Jews by being like, her latkes were what? They were what color? Yeah.
If that had come from comedian Suze Kempner, I'd have been less shocked, because she came on the show and told us how sometimes she puts Brussels sprouts in her chicken soup. Oh, look at your face. I'm so happy. I'm going to WhatsApp her now.
I like Brussels sprouts, but yeah, it doesn't make sense.
I think we're going to have to make this soup before we judge it, because you've been very disparaging about the idea, and it's their family tradition, Rachel. And if you can't accept people for who they are,
what are you even doing here? Were they just trying to get the children to eat more vegetables, do you think? She does it now. But yeah, I like Brussels sprouts, but I've never heard of that before. Wow.
I don't think anyone has. Around this time in the show, we normally ask about food, because I'm a Jewish mother. So my main concern when I see anyone is, have you eaten yet? And especially if we've got a time difference, I've got no idea what time it is for you, Mara. And have you had your lunch?
It's the afternoon. I had like a brunch today. I had eggs. I had some sauteed greens. I had a side of toast. But I was actually just thinking today that I should pick up some Kittim tea biscuits, because those, I think, go really well with tea, because you can dip them in tea and they won't fall apart, and I'm trying to think if there is an equivalent to them. Do you have Kedem brand over there?
I know exactly the biscuits you mean.
Yes, you do.
And we have that brand. I'm just trying to think of what's the equivalent for people who don't eat kosher biscuits. I guess it's a bit like a rectangular rich tea biscuit.
I was going to say, they're ridges like around tea biscuits. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in the UK, and I know my biscuits. but they are a bit like rich tea biscuits. In fact, I've seen things like them at Indian grocery stores. There's an Indian grocery store near me, and I think I did a double take there once. I used to live in a neighborhood that had a very big Greek population, and there were some that were similar there too. So I wonder if it's not maybe like a Mediterranean or Middle Eastern thing. They're good though. I love them, and they feel very light. You know,
I love the amount of thought you've put into why they're so, like, specifically so good.
Oh, I get cravings for them all the time. And they also have the chocolate tea biscuits and the vanilla flavored ones. And they're very simple, but sometimes you just want something very simple to go with a good cup of tea. And I was just thinking about that, because that's probably my favorite kind of breakfast. You know, you just have poached eggs, you have sauteed greens, so you're healthy. You know, you have your toast. And then, you know, I love like a full English breakfast, obviously without the sausage, because I don't eat sausage. I still sort of nominally keep kosher. The idea of a lot of shellfish, and the idea of, like, I didn't grow up eating basically any fish that wasn't kosher. So the idea of any fish that isn't kosher just completely grosses me out. And pork still grosses me out, even though I know that millions of people all over the world eat these things. But I do love a full English breakfast without pork. But I love to just do this and have that as breakfast, and then have a cup of tea and some biscuits. For brunch, I think that's perfect. And I love the Kedem tea biscuits.
We did during lockdown, just after my son and daughter-in-law got married, because it was a little teeny lockdown wedding, and we sort of tried to do things on Zoom to stay connected. We did a breakfast together on Zoom, and I said, oh, I'm going to make full English breakfast, but kosher. Mm. So I did it with kosher sausages, with like lamb bacon, latkes instead of hash browns. And I fried the bread and the egg fat, like I cooked everything in the sausage. I did it all properly, beans and tomatoes and mushrooms. I've never ever eaten that before. And I felt so terrible after, like I was so full and it was so heavy. And I thought, I don't know how people have this every single morning.
Yeah, I will say that I probably only eat about half of that.
Right.
Especially if you get it at a, you know, an English restaurant or an English pub in the US where the portions are twice as big.
I mean, I felt this was a lot, just it was a lot of items. And then she'd made, I assumed it was going to be the same, but she'd made a full Indian breakfast. They had like kedgeri and things like that.
I love kedgeri. Yeah, I love it. I eat it all the time. Oh. So easy. And it's a good kosher thing too. You know, mm-hmm. You don't want to worry about that's something, because I have like a stereotypical Ashkenazi stomach. I am always, you know, chugging seltzer to make sure that I don't feel too ill, and yeah, stomach problems all the time. And kedgeri is one of the things that I can eat pretty regularly. That and matzo ball soup are comfort foods for me whenever I'm feeling ill.
I think that is the sign of a good Jew.
Yeah.
It's someone who knows they shouldn't eat the food they're going to eat, so they just stock up with the medicine they need.
It's true. I mean, often sometimes these days, garlic has been upsetting my stomach, and that kills me because garlic is in everything good. So yeah. I'm going to try to see my sister's partner, who's, you know, also Jewish. He's a sweetheart and he likes to cook for us. He likes to cook for us and he likes to clean for us. Like my sister and I were living together for a while and he would just come over and clean and cook. And we were just like, you're great. Please, you know, marry my sister. And I should ask him to make me matzo ball soup without garlic at some point. I don't know how he'll do it, but he made me a low FODMAP is the term they use for all the things that can trigger your stomach. And he made me low FODMAP tomato soup. That was wonderful. So if he figured out how to do that, I bet he could figure out.
I've never put garlic in my chicken soup in my whole life.
Really?
You should. It will taste much better.
Please tell me. Yeah, please send me a recipe because...
Oh, I will. I can show you. Listeners will not be able to see this, but the fabulous actress Izzy Sutty was on the show a while ago.
Oh, yes.
And we talked a lot about chicken soup. And she said she'd never been taught how to make traditional chicken soup. I taught her. Here's a printout of our WhatsApp conversation where I showed her stage by stage with photos how to make chicken soup. The reason that this is printed out is because it's in my new Edinburgh show. I talk about it. My yield was 12 tubs, by the way, from that one. Don't want to show off. But
oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So I need that whole
please,
recipe.
Please.
Everything.
Yeah. If you want to send it over to my publicist as a PDF, she'll probably appreciate it too. I would lovely. And I love Izzy Sutty, by the way. I was like, I know that name. Who is it? And then I quickly Googled her and I was like, oh my gosh, it's Dobby. So
yeah, she's fabulous.
Yeah, she is. She's hilarious. So
this might be slightly off topic, but you're in LA. Is there still a restaurant called The Stinking Rose?
There is. Yeah, is. Well, no, actually, I don't know if it's there, but I do remember it.
I was there quite a while ago, 10 or so years ago, maybe longer. And it's a restaurant. It's all garlic, Rachel. Mm. Like, if they did chicken soup, it would be garlic. They do garlic ice cream for dessert.
Yeah, it's garlic everything. I like garlic, but yeah, that would keep me in agony for.
I mean, we had one between three of us. There are about 12 or 13.
You had the ice cream.
We
had the ice cream. Yeah, we did.
When you roast garlic really slowly, it goes very, very sweet. So I can kind of get how it would work. So was it like was it like dairy ice cream? Was it like a sorbet? Tell me about the ice cream.
It was a dairy ice cream. It wasn't a sorbet. It was a definite ice cream. We'd had so much garlic that night, though, I couldn't possibly tell you if it tasted like garlic. Fiber of my being tasted like garlic. So I don't know. But it was all right. The restaurant was amazing. If it's still there and I ever make it back to LA, I will happily go there again. I don't know if I would have the ice cream.
I went to a boarding school, which is, well, some of the boarding schools in the US are similar to ones in the UK. The one that I went to was not. I went to an arts boarding school that was very hippie-ish. And there were a lot of Jewish students and there were a lot of international students. That's where, you know, there were the guitar circles and the drum circles. And we all were, you had to pick a major and your major was, you know, your major, your concentration was various forms of art. But I remember we had a thing called the senior sleepover because, you know, girls would be in girls' dorms, boys would be in boys' dorms. But this night we got to stay in the same room. It was heavily chaperoned. Yeah, I know. Heavily chaperoned. And I don't even know how we got away with it, but it was extremely chaperoned. I remember that. And there was nothing, no funny business at all allowed. You would have gotten in trouble for it if there was. But I remember a couple of kids had gone to this restaurant in town called Aroma before it. And Aroma was pretty much all garlic too. So all I remember is just waves of garlic coming off these people and just like being in my sleeping bag, just surrounded by all the garlic. And honestly, garlic was what I remember from that night, not any kind of shenanigans.
So, that could have all been very different if someone would have had some chewing gum.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It could have all gone down very differently.
Yeah, I think the chaperones probably sanctioned the garlic trip.
I'm betting they did. You know, it might have been a suggestion from one of theirs. Although we were also an art school, so there were a lot of gay kids too. So they didn't get off scot-free, but it might have been a little easier for them to get sneaky. I also have to ask, in Los Angeles, did you go to any of the famous Jewish delis out there?
I've done it in New York.
You have your kosher, you know, your kosher restaurants in LA. I mean, there's tons of kosher restaurants, but there's also the like the three big, you know, Jewish delis. I would say there's like three or four, and Cantor's is my favorite. Cantor's is my family's favorite. And Cantor's also has like a rock star history. So many different rock bands, everybody from like Alice Cooper to Frank Zappa to Guns N' Roses to, you know, to like hip hop artists, to everybody went to Cantor's at some point. And there's a huge rock history there. But it's also funny because it's where my brother's Jewish Little League baseball team would go after practice as well. So that's something that I think is kind of funny that there's, you know, there were all these rock stars there, but there were also kids in sports teams called the Maccabees sitting there eating their matzo ball soup after practice on Sunday.
I do like the way we use things like the Maccabees for sports teams now. They've got this incredible history for what they did back in the day, but now they're Little League.
Now they're a bunch of little kids, curly haired little kids running around.
So if you've got the restaurant that's got connections to rock stars and celebrity and things like that, we always like to find out who your 6 degrees of can't eat bacon are. So this is where you get to tell us who are your most interesting Jewish connections.
Okay, this just might be something I made up. But when my mom was angry, she looked like the mugshot of Emma Goldman. I don't know if you know who that is. Emma Goldman was an infamous early 20th century American anarchist who had some very interesting opinions, some of which I think are wonderful, and some of which I'm like, what were you talking about? She was a fascinating woman, fascinating, complicated woman. And I mean, it was very hip to be an anarchist at that time, I will say, in the United States, because we didn't really have any labor laws whatsoever. And people needed to, you know, people were trying these things. But I sometimes wonder if maybe I'm related to her, and it's completely made up. And I think it's just because we're both Lithuanian Jews, and because my mom looked exactly like her mugshot when she was angry.
I've just found her online. Yes. This is Rachel. This is her.
Yep, that's her.
Was the similarity only when she was angry?
No, she kind of looked like her otherwise too. Sometimes I wonder to myself, but I think I'm trying to think of other people. You know, there's an organization here in the US called Miri's List that helps refugees get the things they need to get resettled in America. And it's funny because I was thinking about the name Miri, and then I thought about it, and I was going to give a speech for an event for her. And then I thought about like, oh my gosh, Miriam in the Well. And that I think is such an interesting connection because it's, you know, somebody who brings something that everybody needs to the world, to these people. I was like, oh, wow, that is a very apt name. And I think that that's something that is very interesting. Sometimes I wonder if like our names are our destinies. Like, do I have a bittersweet sense of humor because my name is Mara?
That's a great point. Mara means bitter for anyone listening, although you're not coming across bitter at all.
I'm not. I'm bittersweet. I'm like, you know, I'm like semi-sweet chocolate you use for baking.
Well, the question would be, what do you like eating at the Seder? Do you like the bitter herbs or do you hide them under your kiddush cup like me?
What I like the most is I always liked dipping parsley in salt water.
Right.
I like the saltiness. I like the saltiness. Maybe it's because I have low blood pressure.
Do you have a middle Jewish name as well?
I don't. It's just Elizabeth, although that might have a Hebrew root, but no, it's just my Hebrew name is just Mara. But I don't know if this is like blasphemous or not, but but I've given my cats Hebrew names.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah, we've given our pets Hebrew names. Yeah, my cat Milo, his was Chaim, and Thea was Baruch, because he is very
hang on. You don't mean you've given them just a Hebrew name. You've given them ceremonial Hebrew names for use at their bar mitzvahs?
Yeah, you know, something like that. Yeah. We consider it almost like, you know, it is sort of a ceremonial thing. We haven't given them bar mitzvahs, but, you know, we could. But we just needed it. And I mean, one of my siblings gave all of his pets like traditional Yiddish and Hebrew names. It just sounds like he has like a couple of extra daughters because, you know, I mean, I won't use the actual name, but he'll just be like, you know, oh, Shira's chewing cardboard again. Things like that. Yeah, I can't believe Shana just threw up on the carpet. It, you know, something like that.
I always said if we had a dog, I wanted to call it Batsheva, because that would have been the name I'd have given to our daughter if we had a daughter.
Yeah.
And no one in my family will accept that. I think it's one of the main reasons we've never been able to have a puppy, is because they say they don't want to stand out in the street going, Batsheva, Batshi, whatever, and have people not know what they're saying, which I think is rude, because those are good names. Yeah. I was just thinking about the name Mara because it's, I mean, I assume you know this, I'm just saying for people listening, from the story of Ruth, like Naomi, her mother-in-law says, call me Mara, I'm bitter because her family died, but she's someone who did find happiness again. Like, it's a happy ending story.
It is. But yeah, yes. I've always loved that story. And yeah, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara. And I've always loved that story. And I've loved the story that actually I was named for, which is, you know, Exodus, Moses leads the tribes to, I think it's an oasis. Yes, it's an oasis. Mm-hmm. And the water there is bitter, but then Hashem casts a branch down into it and it makes the water sweet.
Yeah.
So that's a story that I really love as a metaphor, really. And I do think that, you know, finding that balance between bitter and sweet and taking bitter things and making them sweet, I think are something. And maybe I just think in metaphors, but I like that. I think that that is something that I've taken into my life and found meaning in.
Like with the gefilte fish.
Yes, exactly. Or, I mean, for me, it's more that I really like baking and I, you know, I use a lot of dark chocolate and semi-sweet chocolate in things. And that's something that I joke about a lot. You know, I'll make chocolate chip cookies and I'll be like, yeah, it's bittersweet, just like me.
I was just thinking that the first time I really thought about the idea of the branch in the water, I mean, I'd learned it at school. And then I was watching, I can't remember which survivalist kind of show, Bear Grylls or Ray Mears or one of those people who like shows you how people survive in different climates or whatever. And they did something like that. There was like some kind of pool of water and they said, but you can filter it using these branches. I can't remember what happened, but there was something to do with like, it's an actual thing. And I got very excited about it. And I'm really pleased I wasn't watching it when I was with Philip at any point, because he would have made fun of me a lot, I think, by how excited I got. I don't want to fall out with you.
I would have taken it in my stride.
Would you?
Absolutely.
I do wonder what kind of tree it was that, I think it, is it Tamar means like palm tree, right? So maybe it was a palm tree.
Yeah, it's like date palm.
Yeah. I wonder if that would still work today. I mean, probably. But we didn't know, you know. Hashem cast the branch down and now we know.
What could be more Jewish than interrupting our own show in order to advertise our other shows? Rachel and I will both be appearing at the Edinburgh Fringe in August, and here's where you can find us.
My show is called Rachel Krieger, Ultimate Jewish Mother. It's at Whistle Binkies every day apart from Saturday from the 6th to the 27th of August at 1:30 p.m. To have some lunch and then make your way over to hang out with me and ask any questions that you've ever wanted to ask the ultimate Jewish mother.
And I'm going to be there with two shows. The first is the Jewish compilation show called Jewarama, where we have a mix of Jewish and Jewish comedians appearing at the Fringe. That is 5:15 at Whistle Binkies from the 5th until the 27th of August. I'm also going to be doing my solo show, which is a very chatty crowd work show called Shall I Compare Thee in a Funny Way? And that's running from the 5th until the 20th of August at 8:55 p.m. at Banshee Labyrinth on Nidri Street.
And finally, I have a one-off show with comedian Richard Wright, which is at the Globe Bar on Monday, August the 7th at 3:30, called What We Did in Our Summer Holidays. It's about how Richard, a Christian, and I, a Jew, were sent to religious holiday camps every year in the summer. And when we came back and had to write that essay at the beginning of the new term, ours were a little bit different from our classmates.
Both of us will also be appearing in various other shows throughout the month, so keep an eye on our social media and our websites for more information.
And now back to the show.
You said something earlier that I was triggered to think about, because you said tomato, tomato, mm-hmm. and Rachel and I fall out all the time over bagel and beigel. And I imagine you'll be on my side with this, because you're a sensible person and in America, and you're going to say bagel.
Correctly.
I've never heard beigel before.
Thank you very much.
I've never heard beigel. There are people in the US who call it, I think sometimes they'll call it bagel or something like that. Yeah, they'll call it. I've heard it other ways, but a lot of the times those people come from places where there aren't a lot of Jewish people around, or, you know, they'll maybe say bagel.
Those people need to not be allowed to eat them.
Yeah. I mean, I will say the bagels in Los Angeles are not known for being very good. Mm. When I go back to New York, the first thing I do is get a bagel, and they're amazing.
Yeah.
And actually, I think one of my brothers had the nickname Bagel when he was in high school, because he always brought a bagel to practice. And that's how you know that we grew up in the town that didn't have very many Jewish people in it. Like, what is that you're eating every single day? A bagel? Okay, we're going to call you Bagel from now on. Yeah, that's why we went two towns over. That's why we went to, although we did have a very good Jewish nursery school. And I actually have friends who have sent their kids to it too. There's photos, I think, of all of us, of like me and my sister both playing Queen Esther in the Purim play. Except my sister was very nervous to be on stage, and I was all about it.
You didn't fall out though.
No, she was fine with it. She's a visual artist. We're still very close.
I think my two kids are going to be the same. One's very shy and doesn't really want to be part of any of that. And the other one would definitely. But if you've heard tomato, tomato, or bagel, or beigel, that for us is a silly little broigus, a little feud. So we want to know if you had a particular either family, friends, professional broigus that you know of, or that you feel comfortable sharing with us without getting yourself in any extra trouble.
Let's see. I do remember having a fight with my best friend, who was also had one Jewish parent and one not, when we were 12, over whether Sting was better with the Police or as a solo artist. Mm-hmm. We got into a massive fight about that. And there was a lot of, you know, very, very wordy things about that. I also got some flack for being in a Christmas movie, as you might imagine, from a lot of other Jews. But the truth is, a lot of American Jews wrote the best Christmas songs. And that's the thing. And unfortunately, there just aren't very many Jewish holiday movies. But I wish there were. And I feel like people sometimes will, they've been making more of them, but they're mostly about Hanukkah.
Yeah, Hanukkah is the big focus. And Prince of Egypt.
Exactly. There's Prince of Egypt too. There's also Prince of Egypt. But I feel like I would love a good Rosh Hashanah movie. And, you know, I've thought about it. I'm like, should I write a Rosh Hashanah movie? You know, and have some more like eccentric Jews. Like, I would love to have like, Izzy said he would be a really fun person to have play like a rabbi, or like Eric Andre, yeah, or somebody, some ridiculous Jewish comedian. Comedians, I think, would be, you know,
Mandy Patinkin as your dad.
Oh, I mean, I should be so lucky, right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, imagine the lullabies to get you to sleep.
Oh my gosh.
Barbara Streisand is your mom.
Yeah. We could very easily do this, I think. I was like, why don't we have one about Rosh Hashanah? Why don't we have one about Pesach? Because, I mean, if people still love Fiddler on the Roof, if they still connect to it, then I think, you know, they can connect to an idea about a holiday. Or, I mean, a Yom Kippur one would be very funny because tensions flare.
Right.
I feel like a Yom Kippur movie would have to be a Tarantino kind of dark.
Oh, really, it would be very, movie. I was going to say, yeah, it would get very intense very quickly.
But the good thing about a Jewish holiday movie is that the sequel is already built in, because you've got first day Rosh Hashanah, second day Rosh Hashanah.
So yes.
Immediately, the franchise is there.
That's
true. Pesach, you got the first days and the last days. That's four for you.
Yes, that's true. That's true. I think, yeah, that's definitely something that I would love to see. I know that I'm going to immediately have the, what's the French word? Like the l'esprit de l'esprit. I don't know. I don't speak French. Where immediately after you think about all the fights and arguments you've had. I've had fights with people over whether or not Passover is fun.
Right.
And
what's your view?
I don't think it's very fun, but that's also because I grew up in a family without a lot of good cooks.
Right.
So I grew up keeping Pesach, you know, Orthodox in a family without a lot of good cooks in a time when there weren't a lot of alternatives. So I don't have happy memories of that holiday.
So that's the sad story you need to make that people don't realize, you know,
yes,
that's the reveal. Yes. I can't imagine Pesach with poor food.
Yeah.
And I've never felt sorry for anyone in my life as I feel for you now.
Yes.
I thought it was interesting what you said about, I mean, presumably it's Miracle on 34th Street is the film that caused the boycott. Is like, so what do people do? Like, write your horrible letters?
I just got some side eye, I think, from it. And people would say, and people who weren't Jewish were like, why are you in a movie about Santa Claus if you don't believe in Santa Claus? And I was like, well, I believe in the Tooth Fairy. I believe in other things. And I think John Hughes, who wrote the movie, put a stop to it once by saying, look, Mara's an actress. Being people who aren't her is what she does.
Yes.
But I will point out that, you know, Jewish Americans wrote White Christmas and we wrote, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and all of these things. So
you've been to synagogue on Yom Kippur. You know that we have a catchy tune.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, and I will say one of my favorite things about Pesach is singing Dayenu. Yeah, I love Dayenu.
It's a great song.
It is. It's a great song.
Obviously, you've been in like a million amazing films. And, you know, you're known for like Matilda, Mrs. Doubtfire, those sort of films when you were young. But do you think your Jewishness has impacted in your career at all? These are characters that are playing for someone else, but maybe the choices that you've made or how people have responded to you.
I do think that it's always been a part of me and I've always been, you know, pretty open about it. And I think about this a lot, actually. It's interesting because there's a very particular standard of beauty in the U.S. And even though, you know, we do have Jewish directors and producers and such, I feel like Jewish women, like Ashkenazi Jewish women, aren't necessarily considered beautiful. And unfortunately, I do think that that has affected my career somewhat, because I think that the standard of beauty is still this kind of white Gentile kind of thing. So that is definitely something that, unfortunately, I do think. And it's funny now because I don't do much screen work as much anymore. And that doesn't bother me too much because I love doing voiceover. But I feel like it is limiting in some ways because I feel like I don't see a lot of women who look like me on TV. Again, when I think about the women that my mother looked like, I think of, you know, Margaret Hamilton as the Wicked Witch of the Wizard of Oz, because there were so many stereotypes about the ways Jews looked and that made their way into like witch culture and mythology and such. Or I think about, you know, freaking Emma Goldman, who, you know, was was a notorious, you know, was a notorious criminal at, you know, and so I do think that it hasn't affected it in a negative way, because I don't feel like I do see very many women who look like me on TV and in film here. And I don't know if that's internalized anti-Semitism or what. And I hope that I haven't brought things down too much by bringing that up. But, or you see a lot of non-Jewish actors playing Jewish characters. That doesn't bother me so much when it's just sort of like nominally Jewish, you know, somebody like Jason Biggs playing a character who's Jewish. But when it's central to the identity of the character, that makes me think, you know, there were a lot of Jewish actors and actresses out there. And I know there's a lot of Jewish comedians who've talked about this. I think like Sarah Silverman has talked about this. And you know, this is something that I think about, where I recently was asked for availability for playing a part. And it was an historical part that was a Jewish woman. And I remember thinking, if they don't go for me, I really hope that they go for another Jewish actress. Right. Because this person was Jewish, and that is important, I think. Mm. So that's something that I think about a lot. But I also think there's been a lot of debate
about The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, where the crew are like, it's such a mixture of Jewish and non-Jewish actors, writers, whatever. I'm not going to ask you, obviously, to comment on individual people in their castings. That would be very inappropriate. But
I can kind of see both sides of the argument in that one, you know.
It's a great show. Like,
it is a great show. It is a great show. And it's not the biggest deal, but it is a little bit frustrating, I think, sometimes to, you know, to miss out on parts that are specifically Jewish to non-Jewish people. That can be a bit frustrating. There's that, but I also think that just Jewish culture, it is such a part of who I am. You know, it is always going to be a part of me. And I also think that it's the people that I connect with the most.
Right.
I think that that happens to me a lot. I don't know. I think it is something that means a lot to me. And I do think that I come across as very Jewish.
You do. I was thinking that your cadence of your voice and, you know, in this chat, as opposed to when we've seen you acting, you know, it made me think of, I'm not comparing us, I'm just saying, but when I started out in comedy, I didn't really want to do Jewish material because I thought, who's going to be interested in that? And also, like, you know, my life is so Jewy, like all the time, give me a break.
Yeah.
But everyone said to me, oh, you've got a USP, like you're crazy not to use it. But all the Jewish professional comedians, they all said to me, you do understand that whatever you're talking about, it sounds Jewish. Like, it doesn't matter because it's everything in your delivery. I'm hunching my shoulders now while I tell you the story. Yeah. You know, my gesturing, whatever. Do you think that it flows into the books you've written even?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think, and to just my everyday mannerisms. And I think that the way that I analyze everything, and I think that my, you know, my mom married a man who is, you know, Irish and Irish Catholic. And there's a lot of guilt in theirs, but I think there's a lot of, you know, guilt on that side. But there's also a dry sense of humor on that side of the family. And they're not Jewish, but they've got, I think, a similar, you know, dark, dry sense of humor. But also, I think they're very analytical. And that, I think, is something that my mom really liked, because my mom was also very wordy, very analytical. That was kind of who she is. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, I personally think a lot about, you know, if I had been born hundreds of years ago and in an era where I was allowed to survive, what would my place have been? You know, because there weren't a lot of opportunities for women. And I thought about it, and I think a lot of, you know, Gentile women I know, it's sort of like, okay, well, maybe you would be the wife or the mistress or a nun, you know, or dead. But I think I look back on it and I thought about it, and I think it came to me when I was visiting like an historical site somewhere in the East Coast. Because we do have history here, but it's not that old, or it's Native American and thousands of years old, but has been pretty well covered up. But we were at a place that was maybe, you know, 200 years old, 300 years old. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, if I had been born a couple hundred years ago, same, you know, circumstances, Jewish, what would I have been? And I think I turned to my brother and I went, oh my gosh, I would have been the Yenta. I absolutely would have been the Yenta, because I am known for being in everybody's business. I am nosy as hell. I am super nosy and not a total control freak, but a little bit of a control freak. So yeah, I would absolutely be in everybody's business, you know, and I would be setting everybody up, that I would be the matchmaker. And yeah, he laughed a lot at that. And he was like, yeah, that is exactly who you would be.
Excellent.
I've set a couple people up. I've introduced a couple people who've dated. They're not together anymore. So, and I've been at the beginning of like, oh, okay, I see this is happening here. Even though that wasn't really my hand in things, but I've definitely been able to tell, like, I've met couples where I was like, oh, they're going to get married, or they're going to be partners for the rest of their lives. And I mean, I don't know about the rest of their lives, but they seem pretty happy now and pretty committed. Yeah, a couple of times I have, but they broke up. Although I do have a friend, my friend's mom is a Jewish mother, and she says that she will get her place in heaven with three, and she's on two. So every now and then she's like, so Mara, is there anybody that you want to date? Anybody I can introduce you to?
Right,
I'm on two.
Are you really? All right. Yeah. Well, yeah.
I'm very excited.
My sister-in-law gave me a shirt last year that says "I heart nice Jewish girls," which I thought was very funny. But I was also like, if I wear this to, you know, an event, will people think I'm being too much of a tryhard?
We're all tryhards. I mean, that's true. We are. That's our genetics.
It's true. Yeah.
I'm on two, and they both have babies, by the way. The two.
Oh, really?
That I've already made. And so, yeah, because I was thinking, you know, once you get that third and you've got your free pass to heaven,
yeah.
Like, I mean, what's that going to do for my brand? Like, do I start eating bacon? Like, what happens then? Because, like, I don't have to do all this stuff anymore.
Wow. Yeah, that would probably lead to a bit of an existential crisis.
At the very least.
You may have heard of the word Duolingo, the language. Experts. Well, we are now rebranding that with Duolingo. So do you have any favorite Jewish phrases or words, Yiddish, Hebrew, something you like saying or hearing?
Let's see. It's funny because I grew up in Los Angeles, and I remember I heard my mom on the phone once say like, ay, ay, ay. And I sighed, and she was like, what? And I was like, Mom, not everybody knows Yiddish. Or no, I think she might have even said, I'll see you manana. And I was like, Mom, not everybody knows Yiddish. They don't know what you mean. So I used to get Yiddish and Spanish confused a lot.
Hang on, were you watching the Terminator films going, why is Arnie talking Yiddish?
I think I might have thought, hasta la vista. I was like, oh yeah, that might have been. There were a lot of words that I thought were Yiddish. Let's see, a favorite in my family, and I don't know if this is, I think it's Geschlachtenkopf, und schrei. It's like go bang your head against the wall and scream.
Right.
Okay, something dein Kopf und wand und schrei chai. I think it's go bang your head against the wall and scream bloody murder.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm saying it wrong. Please, somebody feel free to correct me on my Yiddish. But
someone will.
I absolutely, please do. But yeah, go bang your head against the wall and scream bloody murder is definitely a fun one. That's probably my favorite. I don't use it that often, but you know, maybe I should. Maybe I should start using it more.
I think you should. I think if you find out you haven't got a job because you're too Jewish, then the best way to respond is with a Yiddish phrase that tells someone to go and bang their head against a brick wall.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. Go bang your head against the wall and scream bloody murder.
Well, that's nearly all we've got time for, but how will our audience know what you're up to if you never call, you don't write? Normally we'd allocate 20 seconds to do this, but for you, 30. So where can our listeners find you?
They can find me. They can find me. Now I've taken that off my time by laughing. So I'm at Mara Wilson on pretty much everything. My books, Where Am I Now? Where Am I Now should be available anywhere books are sold. And if it's not available there, go to the booksellers and request it. You can also read my new shorter ebook and audiobook, Good Girls Don't, on Scribd. That's Scribd. It's an app. Go there, get that, check it out. I definitely touch on being Jewish there. I'm also doing a lot more audiobooks these days, and a lot of them have Jewish protagonists, including a wonderful one I did that is for children called Bright by Bridget Young, and two romances that have recently come out, one of which is called Going Bicoastal, and another of which is called Mrs. Nash's Ashes. So those both have Jewish protagonists. I guess I do get cast as Jewish protagonists a lot when it comes to voiceover. And I absolutely love doing it. So yeah, definitely give those a listen.
And just to say that if you go to our show notes, we will be linking to all of the books.
Yes, and these are the audiobooks. Good Girls Don't is available exclusively on Scribd, but the others are available on Libro.fm, on Audible, on pretty much any app or site that audiobooks can be found.
Fantastic. Well, I've absolutely love this, and from now on I'll always think of Mara Wilson as the Jew who survived green lockers but had to draw the line at garlic unless her fictional parents Mandy Patinkin and Barbara Streisand force her to eat them in the film we're going to be making about Pesach or Rosh Hashanah.
L'chaim.
And as my grandmother used to say when she wanted to end my telephone calls, you must have better things to do than talk to me, and you must have better things to do than talk to us, which is a good thing, as sadly we've come to the end of this week's show. We'd like to thank our guest, the fabulous Mara Wilson. Follow her on social media.
Follow us on social media at Jew Talking without the G.
Don't forget to subscribe, like and share with everyone you know,
and join us next time on Jew Talking to Me.
Jew Talking to Me was hosted by me, Philip Simon.
And me, Rachel Krieger.
It was produced by Russell Balkin and judged by our mothers.
Jew Talking to Me? I lived in New York for 11 years. What do you want from me?